Well, good afternoon. We have done it again and made it to Friday. Such an accomplishment. Such a proud accomplishment. And you know how we start off Fridays with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. How are you, Michael?
I am fine. Here I am. I hope that you're doing well, Todd.
Well, I am now. If anything bothered me during the week, it has just evaporated.
Well, Fridays are great, and they come faster and faster, and this has been a Category 5 week of speed and dynamic activity.
Oh, you sound like somebody who gets excited when hurricanes are blowing up the coast.
I think that it certainly is compelling. It brings your feet right back to reality in terms of what's important.
Well, it does. If you're in the path of one of those things, when that hurricane was heading towards the coast of Florida, It was the first time. I don't know if they have new imagery or if it just woke me up for the first time, but I'm looking at this big throbbing eye going towards Florida, and I realize the storm is bigger than Florida. And
well, that's like galaxies. Sometimes some pictures have them be much bigger than they are. The truth is the storm is not that big. A lot of what you're seeing are the ripples of the storm.
The outer.
Yeah. The storm is actually, what, like 50 to 100 miles wide, if it is in fact that big. That's a huge one.
The key part of it, you mean, where the damage is done.
But
I don't know. It looked big and ugly, and I saw an eye there for the first time. I actually saw the eyeball.
It looked
eyeball.
At me. It winked.
Yes, I'm sure it did. And you probably winked back and did a little dance.
I did a little dance for it, but I did a rain dance, like go away, you know, go away. Of course, you know, everybody is like, with these hurricanes, I hate to laugh, everybody is hoping it bypasses their town along the coast and it goes up north. You know it's like everybody loses interest in the hurricane.
As soon as they're safe.
As soon as it passes their city.
Yes.
So this hurricane, for all of the moaning and groaning and, of course, the horror of what it did to the Bahamas, this hurricane really was a ratings bonanza for CNN and for the Weather Channel and for all these people by hanging around an extra day down off the coast of Florida.
It was kind of like the weather version of Donald Trump.
You know, you're right. You're right. And somewhere in a parallel universe, somewhere in an alternate reality, Alabama has been soaked. Just completely soaked.
Now, what was Trump doing? Claiming?
I don't know. You're the guy that explained. You're the explainer of Trump. He was lying. That's what he was
doing.
Well,
the only thing I can explain is that he has a rule that I learned about back when, during the campaign, 3 years ago, or longer, at the beginning of the campaign, when he talked about September 11th and how they were dancing in the streets in New Jersey or somewhere, and nobody could find any evidence that that had actually transpired, and he insisted it had, and that they were just lying, as is his usual approach. And I read that was the rule that certain people believe in today, and that he was living by, and that is, you never admit that you've done anything wrong.
Terrible.
And
terrible.
Well, but the media supports it, you know? The media supports this environment where you have to play the media. And the best, because they're so dishonest and so,
I think, you know. I actually believe in my heart of hearts that if Donald Trump suddenly became a real honest, straight-shooting, empathetic person who told his base without saying it, hey, I'm not just your president anymore, I'm the president of all the people, he'd be loved in this country.
Well, I think you're right. If he started lying the way a normal politician lies instead of the way Trump lies.
Exactly. Yeah. Because in America, they don't judge you on whether you lie or tell the truth. They judge you on the quality of your lies. As a matter of fact, if you don't lie, they'll say, wow, that guy is really the best one, but I think he's crazy. Why is he crazy? Because he tells the truth, and anybody who tells the truth in American politics must be crazy because they'll never win.
I'm not sure that's the opportunity. The opportunity to me is what Trump has done, is Trump has found out that they don't care if you lie. They care if you're channeling what they're feeling. And the two parties have become these representatives of their own bases' feelings. A lot like a talk radio host, I think, attracts the people whose voices he's echoing.
Yeah, well, it's affirmation. It's confirming people's notions. It's preaching to the choir. it's telling you you're okay for feeling that way.
Yeah, you know, so it
I'm saying what you're thinking. I'm saying what you're feeling.
Right, and if you're driving along to work feeling frustrated, right, and somebody's expressing what you're feeling, that's a great sensation.
So you share in the lie with them.
What's that?
Then you share in the benefits of the lie.
The benefits of the lie, yeah. So, but what it used to be, that the expectation was that a politician would be going to the middle so that he could attract the largest number of people, because people on both sides of center were available to either party if they played their cards right, you know? And the idea was, how do I stand close enough to the center so that I can attract as many people as possible from the other side without alienating the people on my side?
Well, that has to go back to that, Todd. Don't talk about that as a dead paradigm, because that
I'm just saying that's the paradigm they used to use. Now
that's the paradigm that they'll have to use again if this country is going to make it through this period of contentious divisiveness.
Well,
seriously,
it could be we have to evolve into some sort of system. We have artificially a two-party system. It's not, there's nothing constitutionally that requires us to be two parties. There's no mention of parties in the Constitution. That's something that evolved very quickly. Maybe we could evolve into a parliamentary, a pseudo-parliamentary type.
Oh, that would be horrible. Well, no, I think the two-party system works very well if it's done in earnest and goodwill.
No, how can you in earnest and goodwill during primary season satisfy the core Republican or Democrat constituency?
You have to go back to the smoke-filled room and have party bosses smoking cigars, whether they're men or women.
But that's undemocratic. Nobody will stand for that.
It worked very well.
It did, until people felt that it was, they weren't.
Well, here's how you fix it is, eventually the American public is going to get hip to the idea that maybe I should vote in the damn primary, that maybe I should vote. What's happening is people are starting to become aware that, wait a second, voter turnout is not just some abstract thing I hear about for citizenship. Voter turnout is the key to winning elections.
Yeah, but I think I think when you increase the energy of the wave, it's still the most energized water molecules that are showing up at the break of the wave, you know? So if there's going to be a 50% increase in the Democrats who show up to vote in the next election,
then they'll win.
Or in the next primary season, they're going to be the left-wing wackos. And if same thing on the other side with the Republicans.
And that is unhealthy.
But that's how it works in a binary system. See, all these things...
No, it doesn't have to work that way. A nation... Look, we have to have a shared reality. There's nothing wrong with the Democrats and the Republicans being similar. We're all Americans. When we become so dissimilar, that sets the stage to be, you know, Yugoslavia. That sets the stage for a
but
country,
that's
a country
where
to
we
break
are.
Down.
But that's where we are. We have a system in which they've had a couple hundred years to figure out how to rig it entirely to their own benefit, and that's what they do.
You keep saying that they're rigging the system, and you're only encouraging people to lose hope and lose faith in the American way.
It's not my job to lie to them. My job is to tell the truth. If that discourages them, I can't help them.
No, but it's not totally rigged. You're presenting an extreme point of view.
Well, you don't think our politics are extreme right now?
I think that our attitude about politics are extreme. I think that the system is still good. I think that it could be fixed. And I think that when Trump finally comes around to realizing that he's doing more damage than good by dividing people to protect his base, he will be an effective president, or he'll become yesterday's news and be laughed at as a doddering old man his 80s who still believes that Alabama is in the path of a hurricane.
But I don't believe that Trump is doing anything different. He's practicing politics the way it's been practiced, but he's watched these people doing it in such a polite, placid way. And he says, if all you do is lie, why don't they lie more? Why don't they lie better? I'm going to lie better than they lie. But he's just repeating their model and putting a Trump twist on it.
And why are you justifying that aspect of this man's complex behavior?
Because I believe that we were being mistreated worse by what came before, by polite guys pretending to be caring and eloquent and all those sophisticated things that sophisticated people want, when in fact they were behind, as soon as they'd shut the door and the lights would go off, they were doing the same thing Trump is doing. What Trump is now doing is throwing it up in everybody's faces and saying, you know what? The media is not presenting an honest presentation of what goes on. You know what? The intelligence community is trying to control our politics. If you had an honest person, right, if you and I went together and we were shown what's behind the walls, we would feel compelled to reveal that in some way or to go to war against it. And that's what I feel Trump is doing. So that's the part that, for me, that feels like it's the right thing at the right time. Somebody's got to stand up and say, this system is a joke right now.
And you think that going to a parliamentary system?
I didn't suggest going to a parliamentary system.
Yes, you did. You said it before. You said
no, I didn't.
Hopefully, we'll.
You didn't let me finish the thought. What I was suggesting was that we would find some way to simulate parliament in the sense that we would have a third party that could offer another view. Because I think in a binary system, as complex and as divided as things are right now, that it's too easy to just say, I'll represent the extreme right, and the other guy says, I'll represent the extreme left, and that leaves us where we are today, with the media then choosing sides and getting underneath those energies, those, you know, they're like the tornadoes that...
But you make sense to a certain degree, however.
Well, thank you. That's that other one of the party, nicest compliments you've ever given me.
Oh, stop now. I'm one of your enablers.
Hang on, Michael. We'll take a quick break. Michael Harrison here from Talkers Magazine. Stay with us on WTIC. It's WTIC. We do First Hour on Fridays with Michael Harrison, and we have a good time doing it. At least I do. I don't know about Michael. Sometimes I think he
gets... Sometimes it's very painful.
Yes.
It's a wonderful time. This is exciting.
So anyway, that was our conversation about the storm, I guess. And somehow it became about, oh, because Trump was saying where the storm was going, and then we got into his whole MO. But, you know, I feel like if you look at the media, if you do look at the way Jim Comey behaved, what you see is everybody's out there looking out for themselves rather than having a mission, a public service mission.
Yeah. Well, I have another angle on the Trump thing. I have become over the years kind of friends with Michael D. Brown, the famous heck of a job brownie, who was the head of FEMA.
Is he still a talk host out in Colorado?
He's back to it. He was out for a while. And isn't it funny? The guy started on Tuesday. He started the day after Labor Day. And on that day he started, there's a major hurricane, a catastrophic major historic hurricane.
Good timing, huh?
Yeah. It's bizarre. And I was on the phone with him and had a long conversation with him. As a matter of fact, I recorded it and we put it out on some of my other podcasts and shows and things. And he came up with a question, which is kind of an interesting question. We were talking about the optics of Trump playing golf during the hurricane in the Bahamas and threatening Florida. And, you know, a lot of people came down on Trump for playing golf. And Trump says, what? You know, what? You know, what? The famous what? I had a quick game of golf. What are you bothering me? You know, I'm on top of everything. And Michael Brown said to me, it brings up the question, what do people expect the president to do?
Well, but this goes back to the posing that they usually do, right? They usually go to some place where they have a nice backdrop with flags and... But maybe people working on computers and making it look like they're at the center of things. And my theory about the presidency is presidents haven't run the government in a long time. They just pretend.
Well, they often are also the recipient of the credit or the blame for whether things go well or not that have nothing to do with anything they do.
Yes.
But this whole idea that in addition to the function of the job, which is to protect and defend and preserve the Constitution of the United States, which it actually does say in the oath, I promise to do that. And that is the job of the president, is to enforce the Constitution, to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
This whole idea of consoler-in-chief, mm-hmm. that the president is on the bully pulpit of raising the country's morale, providing inspiration, providing consolation when the country is hurting, when people are in pain. And our discussion went into that direction. Is the president responsible for doing that, or should the president not care about that and only deal with the things that a president can do, or perhaps that some people want the president to do. And it's a very interesting question of what the role of a president even is.
Yes. And that's one of the great things I think Trump has brought to the job is Trump approaches the presidency as Donald Trump. He doesn't approach it as guy who says, wow, I just got elected to the most powerful job in the history of mankind. What do I do? And then you bring in all these advisors who know how to advise presidents, and they say, well, what you're supposed to do now is you do this, and you're supposed to do this, and you say this. We'll put it on the teleprompter. You read it. And they've become these posers who are so busy trying to fulfill the expectations created by previous presidents that the presidency has become this empty game, at least in terms of the PR
right,
job.
But, okay, we get you on that. You make a good point. But what if the person that the president is, who he or she hypothetically would be being, is a creep? What if the president is being themselves?
Well, fine.
But being yourself is not the total answer to the question. Like in radio, people say, what's the secret of being a good talk show host? Be yourself. Well, what if you're a jerk? You're much better off being a poser and doing something, you know, where the ends justify the means, as opposed to being yourself doesn't cut it.
Well, being yourself, and then you start searching yourself, assuming you have the ability to be somebody compelling, that there's a compelling person inside, then being yourself.
That's a big assumption.
Well, then you're a poser, and people smell posers, and they're not compelled by them.
But aren't we all, in one degree or another, as human beings, searching for our voice, searching for
Yes, but
our
searching
core?
For your voice doesn't make you a poser. It's finding the truth, the true part of yourself that
So what is the true core of Donald Trump as an observer? Is his personality and nature the perfect president?
I don't think he could adapt to other times. I think he's the guy who was needed at this moment because he's not one of those, he's not a teleprompter reading fraud who does everything just like everybody else has done. He's willing to go to war with the intelligence community. He's willing to go to war with the media. Both of those forces are corrupting forces on the country right now.
Can you name a president going back in history who was less of a fraud than Donald Trump? More than a fraud? In other words, how would you see his fraud level compared to, say, Reagan, or his fraud level?
I would say he's the most
Eisenhower?
He's the most honest in terms of presenting his true self. I think we see Donald Trump every day. We don't see a guy playing a part. We see a guy being Donald Trump, and that's what makes him unique. And combined with the fact that he's Donald Trump, so nobody else would be himself and look like what we're seeing right now. And
that's enough for you.
Well, it's not enough. It's a binary choice. You had one of the most corrupt people in the history of mankind, the consummate insider running on the Democratic side. At the moment, the country was crying out for somebody who wasn't a consummate insider.
And well, that was their undoing. Bernie Sanders might have beaten Trump.
Yeah, I doubt it. It's possible, but he ultimately doesn't believe in the American system of government, and I think it's pretty easy to wage a campaign against a guy who's admitted that he doesn't believe in the American system of government. As soon as you admit that you're a socialist, then you've admitted you want a system other than what the founders created, and that's a tough thing to run for president on, even still, I think.
Mm.
Maybe not anymore. I don't know. We'll see.
With the younger generation embracing socialism because of their disappointment in all of the frauds that you and I are talking about, I wouldn't say it's a fair comp.
But younger people drive a lot. They don't drive politics.
They don't drive to the polls.
So they don't drive elections. That's the right way to say it.
Yeah, they'll drive to a protest.
But maybe
they'll
coming
carry a sign,
up,
but they won't necessarily vote.
Maybe coming up, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, the people who are young and say, by the way, they don't necessarily believe in socialism. They just say socialism is all right with them. And that may be just because in school no one taught them what it means. We're going to break, and then we'll continue. Michael Harrison is here on WTIC. Stay with us. We'll get a news update, then more conversation on News Talk 1080. WTIC. So, Michael.
Yeah.
The conversation we're having has provoked some response. I've got some callers on hold who object to some of the assumptions I was making and you were making, and I've got this bit of audio that comes from a podcast with a meteorologist describing how what Trump said about the storm is actually accurate.
There was a lot made about President Trump stating that this hurricane was going to hit or could have hit Alabama. And so I thought I would go to you, the award-winning meteorologist. I mean, what did it look like a week ago as far as the direction of this hurricane?
Well, Dan, to be very frank about it, I think that was an unfair criticism. Because back when we were first looking at the storm, when it was in the Bahamas a good solid week ago or 5 days ago or whatever, the meteorologists, we really did not know what was going to happen. And we had the spaghetti model plots were all over the place. And some of the computer modeling did bring the hurricane through Florida. And there was some speculation by meteorologists, not by President Trump, by meteorologists, that the storm could emerge in the Gulf of Mexico and then move on up into the Florida Panhandle and Alabama. There was a lot of speculation in that direction. So, to me, you can make a criticism of somebody, but at least try to be fair about it. There was a lot of speculation from some very professional meteorologists that this could happen or that could happen. So if I were a meteorologist in Alabama at the time, I would have had my viewers on high alert that if this thing did happen to take the westerly track and move through Florida and emerge up into the northwest Gulf of Mexico, that the
Is that where we cut it?
I'm happy that you decided to cut it. It was becoming so interesting. I'm thinking about taking up another profession.
No, come on. I thought that was
fascinating. Becoming a meteorologist.
So, I might have succumbed to actually trusting the media on something I shouldn't have.
You this fake weather, that fake news is not the problem. Fake weather is the problem. Look, if you play back the recording of our conversation, I was referring to it in a jestful way and not criticizing him for saying that, because of course it could have gone to Alabama. It could have done a number of things. That being said, I think that Trump was using an old model. This guy was saying it was a week ago. I think where Trump got into trouble, and I'm not kidding around now, because you and I kid a lot, but seriously, yep. I think that Trump was using a model that was about 2 days old, and then wouldn't admit that he was behind the curve on that whole spaghetti model thing. So, but
this is part of the problem of everyone examining his Twitter and running whole news networks based on the president's tweets. If he's retweeting something from a couple days before, I don't even remember the exact context of his comment, but that's what happens on Twitter. He might not have known what he was doing.
If he did not have major news operations whose professional strategic positioning is to beat him up constantly, nobody would have made a deal about the fact that he misspoke or was a couple of days old or was drawing pictures with a Sharpie and all that stuff. Anything the guy does, because the media is designed in America today to target audience's predisposed notion, mm-hmm. and to affirm their bias affirmation media, you're going to get this all the time.
And then when there's a special moment where there is a particular sub-narrative that is hot, like how many times a day does Trump lie or whatever, they keep track. They've never right. kept track of the lies of other presidents, and all presidents lie, but this guy, he has big signs with LEDs. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, the same thing's happening to Boris Johnson in Britain.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, this guy's lost his first three votes. he's set a record. No prime minister has ever lost three.
Has anyone called for a new election as quickly as he had to?
Well, or chose to.
I mean, but
look, what it comes down to there, just to shift gears a little bit, but keep it in the same basic direction, mm-hmm. is it is democracy versus authoritarianism. And all democracies have this problem. When you get into a tough bind where things are rough, it's the human instinct to want to have a strong leader. Somebody will take control of the wheel. Somebody will get us out of this. But
the system doesn't go for that very easily, because strong leaders who take control of the country tend not to want to give it up. And when that becomes a new paradigm, it always leads to some type of a fascist power, you know, strongman.
Well, I don't know that we're seeing a strongman. We're seeing a guy trying to follow through on a promise that was made to people. The people.
I'm not talking about him specifically. I'm talking about the concept, why this happens. That a Trump or a Boris Johnson or anybody, FDR, they said the same thing about FDR. People were, you know, right now we look back at history and we tend to whitewash it and broad strokes it. But back in the day of FDR, there were people that were horrified that this guy was elected four times.
Well, they were correct.
He was president for life. He literally was. Mm-hmm. There was no difference between him and Xi Jinping.
Well, they passed a constitutional amendment just based on him.
Yes, to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Right. So obviously people were charged up about it. But the point I'm making is that there is, with the distrust in the media being well placed, that's the issue, that the media, as you have identified, has certain narratives it's looking to jump all over and make money off of. And
yes,
that takes precedence over whether they're being accurate in any way.
But the remedy to lousy media is not state-run media and total distrust of all media.
Well, nobody's got state-run media in this country anyway, so... But it couldn't be much worse than what we've got right now. But there are some people who do reporting. It's all biased, and people have to read it and do the best they can. But if you go back to your Boris Johnson example, what's happening there is democracy playing out. You have Boris Johnson trying to pick up the ball and run with it, and the fact of the matter is the people opposed at this point probably have more energy, the Remainers probably have more energy behind staying in the EU. And part of that's because the whole system has responded. The insiders who make a lot of money off the EU membership don't want anything being upset. The insiders never want the apple cart being upset. So the will of the people is now falling under the persuasion of the machinery that controls the wall, and they're all putting up the wall and making sure that gets stopped. And I think a lot of that's happening to Trump too. Let's just grab this one caller. He wants to take me to task for something. So let's get Peter on from East Hampton. Hi, Peter.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go ahead, sir.
I was watching television for the entire morning of September 11th, and I saw on television, national television, Arab costume people dancing in the street. The reporter said it was from New Jersey.
Have you ever seen that video since?
Well, I think it's interesting that it's been spiked.
So you feel like it happened, but it's been cleaned off of the internet?
Exactly. I think it's an uncomfortable fact of life, and it's unfortunate that you now that it never happened, but I saw it.
Well, what I said was nobody's
never said it never happened. Todd said there's no evidence of it out there in terms of any
video.
Kind of video.
Well, it broke up. I was having trouble hearing that, but
it's okay. The point is, how do we know that you saw it? How do we know you're not lying?
Well, yeah. So I'm sorry, Peter's gone, but the. I think what we're identifying, I think we've come to the crux of what Trumpism is all about, is that there has been a higher level of trust in previous years, which has been waning, and then Trump has stepped in and magnified the flaw in the systems that we're trusting. We've been trusting the media to be fair, not realizing how highly charged in terms of its partisanship and its business
model. Your
point
is well taken, Todd. It just would be nicer if he were able to put an exclamation point on his revealing how much lying goes on both in establishment party politics and in establishment corporate media by being honest, as opposed to making it justified that the best thing about him is he's honest about his dishonesty.
Well, look, we can wish for all the personality changes and surgeries on Donald Trump that we want to wish for. As with every president, it doesn't get done. We are stuck with the guy.
I think he'd be more successful.
He might be. On the other hand, he has absolutely shocked everybody with his success. He has upset the whole apple cart of what everybody thinks the American political system is all about.
To a certain degree, yeah.
Well, he's in the White House, and they've told us he announced he could never even win a primary.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not the first time that that's happened in history, where dark horses, Harry Truman, nobody gave him a shot. And every generation, every age, every epoch has its same story in a different, different package.
Well, not ones who are as upsetting, I don't think. So Jimmy Carter maybe was that guy. Jimmy Carter came out of nowhere, a one-term governor out of Georgia, peanut farmer.
He came out of nowhere as a backlash against the dishonesty of Richard Nixon.
Exactly. He had a good sell on I Will Never Lie to You, and he was a religious guy, and people believed in it and liked the Southern.
Well, do you think that Jimmy Carter was a liar?
Sure. The job requires lying.
But do you think he was a liar, a real big liar?
Well, I don't think it was part of his life before he got into national politics. I don't think you can successfully execute on that stage. It's like if you have a national TV show and you're suddenly going to be a late night entertainer on one of the big networks. You create something that has an aura and an image and an effect, right? And that may require you to do things you've never done before that aren't natural to you at all. Yeah, that's entertainment. The presidency is an entertainment job, is it not?
Well, it's certainly partially that. All the world's a stage. It goes back to Shakespeare. So, yeah, I guess to a certain degree there's a level of entertainment, but it's got to be productive entertainment. It can't be destructive entertainment. Entertainment can be very productive. There have been movies that have been made that have changed the world and uplifted consciousness, awareness, empathy, and, have done good. There have been books that have been written, right? Reading a book is a form of entertainment that have changed the world.
Yes, but we never know with a president if he's doing good or not. But Barack Obama was a good man, it appears. Whether he committed good results, history will tell.
And it also depends on who you talk to.
Exactly. All right, quick break. We'll continue the conversation with Michael Harrison on WTIC. Quick, Harrison, name that band.
Doors, Love Me Two Times.
All right. You haven't lost your speed. Maybe a little of your power.
My power?
I want to play you something else. This was Andrew Yang being interviewed on a podcast. And I just thought, in the context of the conversation we're having, that this is interesting. Listen to him for a minute.
Do you think the politicians are being naive? Are they being dishonest when they're not talking about it this way?
You know what they're being, Isaac? They're being politicians. Like, if you're a politician, your incentives are to make with the happy talk and then get elected. And then solving the problems is secondary because, you have to raise money, you have to try and get reelected. But no one ever back checks you. Mm-hmm. No one ever says, like, did you bring those coal mining jobs back? It's like, oh, you did it. Like, that doesn't really happen very much. And unfortunately, now both our political discourse and our population are not exactly going to dig into people's claims and verify and double check. Like, the institutional mistrust is too high. So you're a politician. The incentives are to say, we can do this, we can do that, we can do the other thing. And then meanwhile, society falls apart.
Okay, so there's Andrew Yang. I think identifying something that's very real, and that maybe is why he's catching on better than a lot of Democrats who are professional politicians.
To a certain degree, except that doesn't give us any indication of, just because he's identifying the problem doesn't mean he's the answer to the problem.
Well,
a lot of people believe because they identify the disease that they're the cure for the disease.
Yeah, but at least to hear somebody talking about it, or talking in such a way that he's channeling that discontent.
You think that what he just said is a revelation? You haven't been talking about this all your life?
No, I haven't heard other politicians talking about how politicians...
Exactly. He's posing as a non-politician.
Yes, exactly.
You know how I know that?
How do you know that?
He doesn't wear a tie.
Yeah, well, that is the best way to pose, isn't it?
Not wearing a tie is more of a statement than wearing the tie when you're on the stage debate running for president.
Yeah.
And that's therefore he's wearing a non-tie.
No, I just think it's interesting that he's running well ahead of lots of people with tons of money to spend and years of doing this, simply by saying something that's quite obvious, but that nobody in the business wants to confess. And somehow, to me, this is what the whole dynamic is about, that that what we realize is that, yes, they talk happy talk. And then when they get in power, it's not that solving problems is in second place. It's that any policies that are designed and pursued have to do with diverting resources and benefits to special interest blocks of voters so that they can control power moving forward.
Right.
And
right.
And that's a tragedy for where our system is at, because nowhere in that is doing what's in the best interest of the country or the people.
But the answer to the problem is not necessarily giving the job to somebody who identifies the problem. Now, what I'm saying is profound, and don't let it just blow, don't let it fly over your head. Todd.
Nothing you say flies over my head. I mean, I write it all down.
I have people telling me all the time, you know, the problem, there aren't enough women in talk radio, and a woman will say that, who can't speak.
Yes.
But because she thinks she has identified it, that her show will now be a big show.
I'm not saying it's important what he's saying because right. he's identifying the problem.
So the answer, I'm going to tell you the answer okay. to the problem he's identifying is to find people who won't do that. To find people who will not be politicians, but will be incredibly competent at taking over the reins of the system to make it work to solve the problems that politicians are not equipped to solve.
You have somebody picked out?
No. I mean, I can make
there
a joke.
There is no such
person. I can make a joke. I could say
no,
you
there's,
or
there's
me
no
or the
such
guy that
person.
Called. That's not true. This is where your cynicism has overwhelmed your ability to see the bigger picture.
Uh-huh.
This country is full of fabulous people who just don't think in terms of running for politics.
So you think somebody who's never thought about running for politics could be placed into the job of the presidency and with their brilliance make something great happen?
If somebody financed and put their mind to putting together a national search, you can find 200 people who could be better president than
yes.
anybody.
A lottery. Had. Yeah, I like that idea.
Not
good
a
thinking.
Lottery. Come on.
Good thinking,
you're,
Harrison.
You're just goofing around.
No,
with me.
I'm totally serious.
Taking my honest, good intentions here and trifling with me.
All right, get out of here, Harrison.
Your entertainment show.
We'll see you next week. Have a great
Take
weekend.
Care.
Thank
Thanks.
You, sir.
Have a good weekend.